جايك من ظهر البلد قاعدين نطلع عصر من الفلافل والحمص والأحوال أبدا ما بتجي تشريت المكان ما بتشاير فيه ولا صديق كله ظهرك عنده حكي جريء قدامك شخص غريب من وين جيت من وين نبات بالمدينة انتشر فيها الحب والحب حب الخلايا نامت وما عاد تفيق جيت من رواية الحي نضيف الكل يوم شوف فيه زبالة ولا وسخ عم تلعب على الطريق.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Habib Battar, a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. Mr. Battar has been a print and broadcast journalist for some of the Arab world's leading news organizations, including the BBC, Qatar-based Al Jazeera, Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper, and the Beirut-based satellite channel Future Television. He has covered a range of political events from across the Middle East, including recent turmoil in Syria and Lebanon, and he has an article at Al Monitor, The Good and Bad Muslims of Western Media. Welcome to Background Briefing, Habib Battar.
Thank you.
And you've taken in your article at Al Monitor, The Good and the Bad Muslims of Western Media, you've taken Barbara Walters to task, who did a recent ABC News special on 2020 called Heaven, where basically it was pretty facile in the sense that Muslims are either portrayed as either good, soft-spoken scholars or bad, bloodthirsty terrorists. I mean, it's a bit ironic, given that Barbara Walters was the one who did the infamous softball interview with Bashar al-Assad that was arranged by personal connections with the Syrian ambassador to the UN. She is famous for basically being the person, she's kind of like Larry King, if you want a softball interview. And pretend to be, opening up to the public, go to Barbara.
Yeah, I mean, she's probably the most senior reporter at ABC, and she's traveled the region extensively. And it's surprising that despite all that, there is this idea that, when talking in general terms, Islam must be treated differently than other religions. And in this special called Heaven, which is a two-hour special, there was an examination of the views of heaven from, a selection of religions. We had Mormons, Catholics, rabbis. We had the Dalai Lama himself being interviewed. And each one of these presented a view of heaven that was kind of a beautiful place and et cetera, and some people strive for. And there was a lot of laughing with Barbara, with the Dalai Lama, and a lot of exchanges with the different priests and evangelists she interviewed. And it seemed very comfortable. When it came to Islam, though, we got this, she had to travel to the Middle East, to Israel, to a prison to interview a militant fighter who was on who was being held for attempted killing of Israelis. And it is curious to me why, after presenting the views of so many religious clerics, you would go and find a quote terrorist to represent the views of Islam. And then to kind of balance this out, we saw a good Muslim being interviewed, which was a scholar from New York. So we had this kind of back-to-back good Muslim, bad Muslim. And it's really interesting that that wasn't applied to other faiths. So there was no militant Jewish person, militant Christian person, militant Buddhist or Hindu person interviewed during this whole two-hour segment. So you have to wonder why Islam was isolated, treated differently. It's actually part, I would say, of a broader trend of Orientalism that has basically influenced all of our print media, but it's just as present in our broadcast media in the United States.
Well, of course, as Syria goes through the agony of the final days of the Assad regime, we've already witnessed a lot of brutality meted out by the Shabia and the Syrian regime. And now, just yesterday, we've seen on YouTube evidence of somebody in the Free Syrian Army grabbing some prisoners who were possibly the Shabia death squads and putting up against the wall and machine gunning them while calling Allah Akbar. So these images will continue to fall into that kind of simplistic dichotomy, surely.
Yes, yes. I mean, one of the most famous images that we see of militant Islam, as it's called, is an image of men marching in an unknown rally in an unknown town kind of shooting up in the air with machine guns and kind of wrapping their heads in usually green bandanas or something like that. And this image was used in the ABC 2020 report, and there's no description of this image. Who are these people marching? Where are they marching? What are they marching for? What event caused them to pour out into the streets and march? So we're presented with a marching militant Muslim with machine gun or yelling, call to prayer or something like that, as the B-roll, you know, which is just the stock footage of militant Islam, when there are just so many different groups in so many countries that hold machine guns for different reasons. We get to the same thing about Christians and Jews and Buddhists and Hindus. Obviously, there are much of the weaponry has been, and the weaponization has happened under, you know, symbols like the cross. And, you know, in the United States, for example, God Bless the USA is a favorite song of American military commanders. And we know that rabbis, priests, at least priests are chaplains in the military, and they pray before battle. So religiosity is really a part of violence all over the map. But if for some reason, kind of pick Islam as, you know, the militant religion.
Sure.
And we're also having a lot of trouble, I would say, within the Arab media too, in presenting not only Islam, but now factions of Islam, such as the Alawites or the Shiites, as becoming as being more violent than others. And we have a number of broadcasters now in the Arab world openly very discriminatory toward other faiths, calling, for example, Shiites one of the famous televangelists in Syria, actually, has been calling the Alawites that should be fed to the dogs, those that are loyal to President Assad, at least.
So this is coming out of the Gulf media, is it? This kind of stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
One of the most infamous preachers is called Sheikh Adnan Arour, and he basically is broadcasting. It's believed from Saudi Arabia, his support from Saudi Arabia. And he's painting this image of Shiite and Alawite Islam as terrorist, as oppressive. And this kind of view is filtering into people because he's very popular on TV, obviously, in opposition to Assad. And I've heard many Syrian refugees tell me that our problem is the Shiites and these kind of really basic stereotypes that are going around. And it's going to be a big problem in the years to come in Syria, the more and more these stereotypes come on the airwaves.
Well, obviously, Habib Bataa, again, a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. It's also going to be make the very fragile political arrangements in Lebanon even more tenuous. What do you think is going to happen in Lebanon with the inevitable fall of the House of Assad and the possibility? The Israelis, for example, are nervous about the chemical weapons ending up in the hands of Hezbollah. But whether that happens or not, or whether the weapons are used, clearly Hezbollah will be weakened in Lebanon. And what do you think that will result in?
Well, it's really difficult to predict the dynamics of how long this conflict will go on and how things change. Right now, I can tell you the effect is we have some estimates that go up to 90,000 Syrian refugees in Lebanon right now. The shortage of hotel room, shortage of apartments for them to stay in. Some people are sleeping in streets. Refugees don't have access to food. There's worry about education for refugees, the worry of overcrowding in schools. So Lebanon is a very small country, and Syria is multiple times the size of Lebanon. So absorbing all of those refugees is going to be a humanitarian problem. The more time goes on and the less space there is in Beirut, some refugees are coming to Beirut. Prices are being doubled and tripled for the price of apartments and rooms in Lebanon. And there's a lot of discrimination towards Syrians and Lebanese history. So there's some tension there, a lot of bad blood between Lebanese and Syrians because of the 30-year Syrian presence in Lebanon, the presence of 30,000 Syrian troops in Lebanon after the Civil War. A lot of Lebanese blame the Syrians for the corruption in Lebanon, for the assassination of the Prime Minister Hariri. So there has been actually the stereotype of the Syrian in the Lebanese media, which is often untrustworthy, often thought of the Syrian as all Syrians are lumped in one category. The Syrian accent is made fun of on Lebanese parody TV shows, as Syrians are thought of as intelligence agents. And so there's a big history there of discrimination against Syrians who actually are the migrant workers in Lebanon. They do most of the construction work in Lebanon. So Syrians are thought of as the regime and the Syrians and the intelligence services are thought of as one. But now what's interesting is that because of the uprising in Syria, there is now a distinction being made between Lebanese groups about the Syrian people and the Syrian regime. So this is kind of a new dynamic we're seeing today. It's kind of a demystification of this stereotype of the Syrian meaning the regime, the government, all one, the workers. Now we're seeing Lebanese accepting Syrians, helping, many Lebanese are helping Syrians out. But again, Lebanon is divided between a pro and anti-Assad camp because of Assad's power within Lebanon, and that filters through so many politicians and different militarized groups.
Well, but it's also sectarian, on the one hand, isn't it?
We have people helping the refugees. On the other hand, we have people accusing the refugees of being, you know, agents of the rebels.
But isn't it sectarian, the support? In other words, the Sunni in Lebanon would be helping the Sunni refugees, most of whom, I imagine, most of the refugees are Sunni, and and conversely, the Shia, the Amal, and the Hezbollah would be supporting the. And this just adds to the sectarian fuel, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely it does. I mean, we've seen the different parties in Lebanon, the pro and anti-Syria political parties, stepping in to help the refugees, but the Lebanese government is trying to play a neutral role. So we have political groups stepping into that vacuum and helping refugees, and obviously they're thinking of recruiting people to their political parties. So with such an influx in Lebanon, definitely there is a danger of both sides becoming more militarized. But, you know, again, you're right. I mean, I've heard Syrian refugees come in, they fear going into Shiite areas and Shiite neighborhoods, and they won't settle where they're not welcome. There are certain areas where they're welcome, meaning the Sunni areas, Christian areas for the Christian refugees. And this kind of stereotypical fear out there that the Shiites are against us. And again, that's being fueled by the television images and the politicized televangelists who are out there supporting, you know, getting the paycheck from certain governments that are supporting the opposition.
So just in the last couple of minutes then, Habib Atta, obviously, you know, you did paint a portrait, and I'd understood this from speaking to Lebanese friends, particularly during and after the civil war and during the Syrian occupation. The analogy was that the Lebanese looked sort of down upon the Syrians in the way that they were the menial workers, like some Americans look down upon Mexican immigrants. And but the difference would be that it would be as though Mexico had occupied the United States, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, that definitely there's a difference there with the power structure, with right. The Syrian regime controlling a lot of Lebanese territory and a lot of Lebanese politicians. And being the purse strings or the political, giving the political capital to different parties. So,
And it was the assassination of Hariri that ended the occupation too.
Yes, that's right. But Lebanon has been bitterly divided since that assassination between the pro and anti Assad camp. Sure. And this conflict in Lebanon is definitely, you know, it definitely has groups like Hezbollah on the defensive and worried about the future. But then again, I wouldn't write those groups off, because this is not just, Hezbollah is not obviously just a trend. It's a social movement that encompasses over a million people that's much bigger than its support from Syria.
So at this point, you're telling us that the refugee situation is so dire that the political end game or how things are going to result from the inevitable collapse of the Assads, people have got their hands full already with the refugee crisis. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that's the immediate concern right now. It's hard to speculate. But then again, we do have some episodes of violence within Lebanon related to the conflict. We have violence going on in North Lebanon between pro-Alawites and anti-Assad Sunnis in the north of Lebanon, which has been going on for quite some years now. So there are a number of low-level conflicts in Lebanon that could definitely increase, but I would be careful to predict the future, because again, everything that's been happening in the region has been so hard to predict. If the conflict ends in Syria in the near future, we might see less of that dynamic happening in Lebanon. On the other hand, the more this conflict continues, the more refugees come to Lebanon, the more that they're used as political pawns by the separate political parties in Lebanon, and there could be increased tension and increased incidents of violence.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Habib Atta.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Habib Batar, who's a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. Mr. Batar has been a print and broadcast journalist for some of the Arab world's leading news organizations, including the BBC, Qatar-based Al Jazeera, Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper, and the Beirut-based satellite channel Future Television. He has covered a range of political events from across the Middle East, including recent turmoil in Syria and Lebanon, and he has an article at Al Monitor, The Good and Bad Muslims of Western Media. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the filmmaker of the wonderful film coming out on Friday, I Weiwei, Never Sorry.